Welcome to the Spike Feed, your leading Magic the Gathering podcast. What is up? My name is Curtis, and I'm just your typical Spike. On the line with me, producer extraordinaire, my good buddy, though not wearing a V-neck today.
No, it's there. Don't worry. It's
just under.
Underneath. Yeah.
Okay. Wow. My good buddy Cameron McCoy, how are you doing, friend?
Good. It's great to see your face, hear your voice, man. You're a great friend, as I have said on the pre-show talk that we've had.
Yeah. Cameron's had a little bit of a rough week, so I'm going to take it easy on him. I'm not going to be as harsh as I normally am, just to kind of build him back up. It's all about building him up, right? Anyway, Cameron, so this is kind of a lighter news week, but I played a lot. You played
some Magic. Yeah, I played some, so yeah.
Hey, there's that. And then I do want to get into this discussion, you know, because people come to us for the freshest takes.
Of course.
So I want to react to a video from a month ago in our new segment.
Yes.
And then we'll talk about video games and comic books in our last segment. So first of all, Cameron, let's start with you, man. What did you play this week?
I played both Standard and Modern. I want to talk about newish Standard. Mono Green Stompy. I went ahead and ran that through a draft league, and dude, it's performing better than it was before M19 was released. And I don't know exactly what is making it better, other than like the Thorn Lieutenant.
That 2-drop, yeah.
Which I think really helps that curve, right? I mean, it allows you sometimes with Alanaware Elves on turn one to like really do some really, really good things. Overall, I had really good success. Not really good success. I played and I had a lot of fun playing this deck. I went 3-2, and Standard still feels a lot like Standard. I mean, like red, black aggro, it's just red, black aggro. It feels very much like mono red from 3 weeks ago. The Grixis midrange deck, I played against that, and I mean, that thing has game. And as we were talking about last week, when they resolve the Grixis dragon,
Nicol Bolas,
you have to deal with that, otherwise you're just gonna die to a 4/4 flyer that's also like destroyed your hand, right? I mean, yeah. So there's that. And I gotta be honest, when I'm playing like the mono green thing, like I have to be faster than them, and the deck is just not fast enough where I have no way to actually deal with a Nicol Bolas efficiently, right? So like that was like a real moment of realization, just how resilient the Grixis deck is. And I really dig that one a lot. So I'll probably check that one out this week as well. Otherwise, yeah, I mean, I'm enjoying Standard. I didn't hate Standard beforehand, but I'm glad that Mono Green is actually performing reasonably well right now, and it's a cheap deck. I mean, you can get it for under $100 right now online. I mean, so it's fun. It's totally worthwhile.
Yeah. Were you kind of a nuanced deck question? Were you running Vinemare, the 4-drop hexproof?
Yes. That's the other one I totally forgot about. Man, we didn't review this card.
Oh no.
But
I didn't even see it, and then I saw everybody talking about it. I was like, what is this card? But
yeah,
every color's got a color hoser quote creature, and Vinemare is greens.
Yes, and just having a 5/3 hexproofer is huge, especially against decks like against like Grixis that, you know, have really good removal. Just having something where they have to target it, and if they don't have a sweeper, you're doing okay, right? But, I mean, you know, it also has some of its own weaknesses. That being said, it's still a super good card, yeah. I totally forgot about that. Like, that saved me so many times, so.
Well, yeah, and so I've played a lot of Standard too, and I want to piggyback on what you're talking about. So first of all, I'm playing Grixis midrange. I think it's pretty comfortably the second best deck in the format right now. Mm-hmm. I actually think the black red Chain Whirler Heart of Kieran deck is the best deck.
Yeah.
And that deck can actually morph a lot, right? It can be super low end and super aggressive, but it can also scale up to where you're playing, you know, some number of Glory Bringers, or I've seen Demanding Dragon in a few lists and things like that. So there's some strange kind of fits with it. I haven't played against the mono green deck very many times, but I am thinking about building the mono green deck in paper.
Okay.
Because it's looking like I might have a few FNMs that I go to, and I'll talk about M19 draft here in a little bit. I have like some number of Steel Leaf champions, and I think they are like crazy undercosted for what they are right now. Mm-hmm. Anyway, they're like $1.50.
So
I could just like throw some money at it and just, okay, this will be the deck I play a few FNMs, without really getting too invested in it being the best deck, because I feel like if I were playing a standard for more than three FNMs, then suddenly I'd get much more concerned about, okay, I need to be playing Grixis or whatever. But it kind of becomes more of a financial decision. Did you get to play any other formats this week, Cameron?
Yeah, I did get to run through a friendly league in Modern as well. And this was the first time that I've played with Teferi in my Jeskai control deck. And I've had this real love-hate relationship with Jeskai control in Modern. If I overplay it, I really hate the deck. Which I think is just natural with almost any deck that you play, you know, every single week. Not maybe hate is a strong word, but you just get bored with it, right? And then there's weeks where I just feel like I have to go and play Modern. I have to play this Jeskai control deck. But this is the first time that I played with Teferi. And this was a list that's running, you know, nothing but snaps for creatures. And then like have Secure the Wastes as just like another kind of semi-win con. And Teferi. No Jace. Mm. And it's the right choice. It hurts so much to say this, Curtis, but Teferi is so much better than Jace in Modern. It's not even funny. Like, I mean, like the resiliency of just having like a five, like just to have like the Planeswalker that comes in with four, you draw a card off of him and you're at five, you're bolt-proof, you have maybe some backup with like a whatever, just having like those two extra lands to negate whatever removal spell they try to get at mm-hmm. you, or you know, Logic Knot, it's so incredibly good. Like wow, good. Like I've always underestimated Teferi, and just playing with him I realized just how much I like the card and how why he is where he's at right now in Modern. So I'm done waxing poetic, but I had once again decent success. I went 3-2. This is like Cameron's,
hey dude,
normal, right? Like it gets me to play more and more games, which is awesome. But not a lot. I mean, it's like it's your Modern deck du jour, right? It's like 1 week I'll be playing a lot of mirror matches. This week I played Humans twice, Burn once, and you know, it's just the luck of the draw whether or not I win some of those games. So yeah. That was Modern. I like the deck. I still just have issues with it, I think, if I were to play this every single week.
So, yeah, can I skate back to your Teferi point, and then we'll kind of work forward about... So, I think Teferi is grossly underplayed in Miracles. You'll see him pop up every once in a while. But I think it's stunning that when I look at some of the constructions for the Miracles decks, again, because Legacy is just in this world where it's just not hyper-tuned, mm-hmm. you see people do weird things. Like, they play three dual lands, a Search for Iskanta, and Back to Basics.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what are you doing? And then mm-hmm. they don't even put Teferi in the deck. Like, I feel like if you're on the Back to Basics plan and you're playing more than one dual, you probably should be playing at least one Teferi. Now, I still think it should be, like, three Jace, one Teferi, some kind of mm-hmm. split like that. But the thing that stuns me, or the thing that surprises me about people's outlook on Teferi versus Jace in Modern, you know, people say, I guess Jace isn't that busted. It's like, well, it's all about the context of the format.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that there is no force greatly impacts Jace's strength. And, you know, we've said this so many times on the air before Jace was unbanned, but it's the truth, man. Like, in Legacy, even if you don't draw into the force, your opponent, they will probably put you on force.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in Modern, there's no risk, right, of anything like that happening. And also, because of the presence of force, you know, Modern is a much more mana-hungry format in terms of control. I mean, your best counterspell is 4 mana. That's unthinkable in Legacy. And so you're so hungry for that mana. I do think people have kind of overcorrected a little too far. I've seen a lot of Think Twice in Jeskai, in Esperless, and I think that is just awful. Like,
just run Opt.
and like... I think you can make an argument for another search risk, kind of like all kinds of things. Like, literally just playing Mana Leak is probably better than twice. But yeah, I want to get to Modern as well, because I did play in a Modern event. And I actually had a pretty nasty losing streak. I went Ot 3 with Grixis Death Shadow at a tournament. And again, I do want to paint this as not only did I not play well, but the deck didn't perform well. It was kind of the perfect storm, you know? Well, I went to this other event, and I dropped my first two matches again. And one of them was my opponent. It was their first Modern tournament, and I was their first victory.
Congrats, man. That's huge.
Yeah, yeah. They beat me, and then they go, you know, I've never won a Modern game. And I was like, you know, hey, I'm happy for you, you know, of course. Yeah. But it was, they were playing Hollow One. I mean, they had the Hollow One deck. Yeah. You know, it wasn't like, you know,
just
whatever.
Just random jank, right?
Yeah. So they had the Hollow One deck. And that's a pretty tough matchup in my experience. Like, I have to have a Battle Rage in order to pull it together, and I just didn't. But I ended up, my store had 15 players, and they did top 8. I got a bye, and then I won my last round, so I got into the top 8.
Nice.
And then I got paired up against one of the top seeds, who happens to be Scapeshift, which is the exact kind of matchup I want, because I just like, hey, here's some discard spells, here's a Death Shadow, you're dead.
Yeah.
And I ended up winning some money. So, whatever. Modern is such a frustratingly... It's a healthy format for the game. I just don't think it's healthy for me. I've been playing it almost exclusively in paper for basically more than a year, and I'm super burnout, right? And I feel like I'm the grouchy guy in the room often about the format. Like, everybody, oh, Modern's so great, Standard sucks. And I'm just like, this is the worst. And watching just... And also, there's just part of me where... You know, you watch some of this Modern stuff and you want to deliver like a commentary. This is a real problem with me in a buy. As the listeners have probably figured out, and you know, I tend to talk a lot. And when I'm watching a Modern match and I'm just seeing putrid misplays.
Yeah.
I want to talk to the person after, but I know it's not, it never comes off right. It's never, you know, it just ends up sounding snooty and whatever. But man, just watching some of the most brutal misplays, especially with my deck Storm, because now Storm has kind of become one of the budget decks du jour. And I mean, people are putting, you know, 70, 80 bucks at Storm, but they're not putting in the reps to get good at it. And ugh, just wretched watching.
It sounds like what you need is a local shop that provides a Legacy tournament, and then you can just play Modern, come and go with Modern, and you'll feel great.
Yeah, really, what I need to do is just move to Des Moines, right, Cameron?
That sounds like the logical answer, yes.
I mean, you guys don't have any Major League sports, though.
This is true.
Which I'm not sure if you're aware of that particular issue. All right, Cameron. So... What I want to do is I'm actually going to cut a break here. We'll do Mystery Box, kind of our MTG Finance stuff next segment, because we're running a little bit long. And then we'll get into our discussion on the Master Sets. We'll be right back. This week, we'd like to thank a few of our patrons, Adrian Petrescu, Ben S., and Justin Hockney. Thank you guys so much for continuing to support the show. If you'd like to become a patron, go to spikefeed.com and click on the donate button. Welcome back, Cameron. So, battling through some technical difficulties. We've already done some of this segment already, so you already know what the mystery box is worth, which is pretty upsetting, Cameron. I love surprising
you. I like to have the surprise. I'll act surprised this time again.
Okay.
Yeah.
128 reserve list cards taken out of my collection from when I was a kid, shoved into a box. The box is taped with some Dollar General scotch tape, but it is taped shut for security purposes. It was worth $221.93 when I initially sealed it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, current value, according to the MTG Manager app, is $269.21, a 21.3% gain. So that's where we're at.
Impressive.
Yeah, I mean, I'm basically going to retire off of this particular...
You wait long enough, and you might be able to.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, Cameron, I work in education. There's no retirement for me. I mean,
well,
I'm just...
True, yeah. You're just going to essentially, yeah, be buried underneath your desk, I would assume.
One day they're going to walk in, they're going to be like, oh, what happened to that teacher that taught here for 80 years? Oh, he finally sent off his last report card.
He lost this mystery box, and it's worth $1.8 million now.
It's buried in a wall. Or shoved into a wall, buried into my... I mixed my metaphors there.
I picked up your metaphors, yeah.
So, hey, there we are. Now, I want to also talk a little bit, you know, hashtag MTG Finance, of my experiences. So a few weeks ago, I solicited for some advice from our listeners about what's the best way to handle buying and selling cards. I'd kind of gotten burned. I wouldn't say burned, but I was not very happy with the eBay process. We'll just say that. The fees started to add up, and I know this is like the most married guy problems thing in the world, but I really like my card money to stay within cards a lot. Mm-hmm. I don't like it coming into my bank account and then out, and then I have to have all these conversations with my wife, and I had to, like, you know, make spreadsheets about, like, okay, here's how much I've deposited, blah. And, you know, because she likes my bankroll to be separate, I like it to be separate, you know.
Sure. Yeah.
And so a listener had emailed me, said, hey, try CardSphere. I've been using CardSphere for about 3 weeks. I've traded somewhere between $300 and $350 worth of cards.
Okay.
And really strong experience with it so far. Here's what I'll tell you. If you are the kind of person that has purchased a lot of boxes and you have, say, some Commander staples or some lower end stuff, bulk, or, you know, these kind of cards that are $3 to $4 that are not tournament staples, that are what I would term as EDH cards.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. They're going to be hard to move on CardSphere. Okay. But what's been impressive to me is I've used it for 14 days or something like that. Until today, my balance had never gone over $10. As soon as I had posted a want, it had gotten snapped up. Like, really fast. Frighteningly fast.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of people, based upon who's been sending me cards and things like that, that are comic shop owners or, you know, card shop owners, these kinds of things. And so they are unloading some of their stuff. It has been an incredible boon for me in terms of trying to build up some old school cards, because I say, hey, you know, I want, I'm trying to think, City of Brass.
Mm-hmm.
You can only play with Chronicles City of Brass or Arabian Nights City of Brass. I don't know if you're aware of this, Cameron, but Arabian Nights City of Brass is like $200.
Okay.
So I just want a Chronicles City of Brass, and I got them way below TCG low. And I wrote, I don't care if they're MP. And I mean, it was like instantaneous how quickly I got them. And I bought them. I think I put my market request at 80% of market value.
Nice.
Some of my Weatherlight cards I put on for 70%, and I was getting them too fast. So wow. I was like, I need to focus on getting some other cards. So I reduced them to 50 and 40%, and I still got some Weatherlight cards. So people are looking to move cards on CardSphere, which is pretty incredible. The velocity is notably different. It's just sending cards out. I think it's much more competitive in terms of you sending things out, right? Mm-hmm. You have to be willing. Like the best offer I got on my Wastelands was 75% of their actual value. So I decided not to send them, you know? And as in an effort to be fair, I've also reactivated my Puka Trade account. Okay.
Okay. Interesting.
There are a few cards that I had that are not worth like a ton of money, but they were like $5 and $6 cards. Have you ever heard of this card, Triumph of the Hordes, Cameron?
I'm sure I've seen it.
It's an overrun. It's an uncommon from New Phyrexia, and it's worth like $5 to $7, okay?
Okay.
There are some number of listeners right now that are listening to this, and they almost drove off the road, and they're thinking, I need to go home and dig out all my copies. Because I had like four of them, and I had, you know, no idea that it was worth anything. Well, when you go on CardSphere, because it's such a tournament-centric, not a casual environment, and there's so many card deals, like the best offer I got was 50% on them. So I was like, okay, I'll throw these on Puka Trade and see what happens. I don't have any real balance on Puka Trade yet. I think I have like 10 bucks worth of Puka points. But I've listed, I don't know how many wants, and everything I see says you have to charge percentages over to try and get anything out of Puka Trade. So I don't know what that'll be or how that'll work, but I'm interested in kind of reporting back. Before I get just a ton of emails and tweets and all this, I am on the Discord for both CardSphere and Puka Trade. I've interacted more on CardSphere, and I've traded away signed cards, which is basically impossible.
Yeah, that's cool.
And had a really good experience. So everybody in both communities has been super nice. Like, there's been no issues there. But I'm interested in your thoughts, Cameron. Like, what questions do you have as someone? I mean, I know these money is essentially meaningless to you. But I'm interested in your thoughts here.
Well, you know, just doing a little research on Puka Trade again and talking with you, the entire Puka Trade, the Puka Point thing, and it's kind of, it seems like exaggerated inflation for what these cards are. I mean, I get it to a certain point, but it just seems weird. And it's, and honestly, I've never used Puka Trade. I mean, I've always just had secondhand knowledge of it through you and through Dustin. It doesn't like scare me, but it definitely like moves me away from it. Like, I have nothing to do with this service because it seems so impossible to get into it. But at this point, especially where it's like, I feel like I'll just have better success going to my local game store, trading everything away there and getting like a certain percentage back in store credit so I can buy other cards, right? So that's where I'm at. I don't know. Like, would you even tell like a new Magic player to use Puka Trade, or is it like just at a point right now where it seems impossible to get into it?
So I'm very, very early. Like I said, like a week. Okay. Like, I just got my first few trades confirmed in terms of sending away. So here's what I would say. Puka Trade definitely has a bigger user base, but it is a much more casual crowd.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning if you have a commander card, there is somewhere in your collection somewhere, Cameron, there's a commander card that's worth like $5.
Mm-hmm.
If you were to post that on CardSphere, I would be stunned if you would be able to move it at 80% or less. But let's say you came to me and said, hey, Curtis, I'm thinking about moving an Underground Sea. I would tell you to use CardSphere because you're going to move it at 90% of its actual retail value. And CardSphere lets you, because CardSphere doesn't have inflation, it has the opposite. And you can withdraw your money because it's all tied to real world money. So it's essentially a glorified buy list.
Mm-hmm.
It's just you saying, okay, this is my wants. And they charge a fee, but it is much less than eBay fees. Like,
yeah.
Oh my God.
That's huge.
And so I think for somebody like you, Cameron, and I know this is so weird because when we started out the show, you were the noob, right? You were the guy that didn't have, you had a standard deck that you had stolen, right?
That's true. Yeah.
And now you've built up such a great legacy collection. You live in such a wonderful legacy city. I think Puka Trade would be completely irrelevant to you.
Mm-hmm.
But if you are looking to sell something for cash, I would recommend CardSphere.
Cool.
I think you would make somebody's day, you know, like they would build up to, I mean, I'm using Underground Sea, but you see what I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah. Three humilities that I have, right? I should totally liquidate some of those.
You absolutely should.
Yeah.
And so, like I said, when you go to Puka Trade's website, you're going to look at it and you're going to say, man, this looks professional. This is some real stuff. And it also interacts with Magic Online.
Yeah.
But just based upon the interactions I've had and what I just think you would have a much better experience on CardSphere. Now, if somebody was just like, hey, I want to build a popper cube, I would probably point them to Puka Trade instead.
Mm-hmm.
So that's cool. That's my early impressions. I'm going to walk people through. I'm going to get, Cameron, I'm going to get a ton of feedback about this.
Yeah, yeah.
But I do feel it's important to honestly use both services and just see. Now, there are some other ones. There's another one called Card Rocket, which I think is also like Magic and Yu-Gi-Oh!, which is another card game, Cameron, that people play. But yeah, anyway, we'll see what happens. Now, the other thing I wanted to mention that just kind of grabbed me this week, and I found myself thinking about it a lot, and I thought, man, I have a show that I can talk about these things,
mm-hmm.
is Tulare Community College posted this video like 3 weeks ago, and I was stewing on it because, you know, I bought those boxes of Dominaria, and one of the guys at the shop told me, you made a huge mistake. You should have bought Battle Bond boxes.
Okay.
And I was like, why? And he's like, have you seen the prices of Battle Bond? So, of course, I looked it up on my phone, and my jaw was on the ground. And there are Legacy-style cards, but we're also headed into another Commander preview season, and there will likely be some number of Commander cards that are playable in Legacy and Vintage. Mm-hmm. But this video, the theory that the professor posits is this. The Master sets have failed. They're too expensive, and they have actually not helped Modern's accessibility at all.
Mm-hmm.
I want your opinions, Cameron. Are you soured on the Master sets as a whole?
You know, soured in the point, in the part of like you pay $10 for a pack of cards, and I've done this every time with almost every Master set, and I think I've gotten an Etched Champion as like probably the most valuable card.
Gross.
Right? So you pay $10, and what bulk rare do you get that you're never going to play? They, you know, you might play well in like a limited style tournament, but I mean, why are you spending $35 to play that when you could have like a lot of fun playing Dominaria in draft or, you know, or something like that?
Yeah.
Just as an example. So, yeah. Are they a failure? I wouldn't say they're a failure because they have put out a lot of cards into the wild. But my question is, does a Snapcaster Mage or a Tarmogoyf need to be a mythic rare? Or should it still be just a rare the way that Thoughtseize was when Theros was released, was put out into the wild, and this $50 card was all of a sudden a $8 to $10 card, you know, at the time of Theros, and it seemed it was playable in Standard, and it was playable in every other format, and it was a great card. It seems, and you can buy a box of, or like a pack of Theros for a fraction of the price. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I guess I would say that the Master sets, I wouldn't call them a failure, but they have certainly been a disappointment on multiple fronts, whether it's just not that fun to draft, or you just don't get the EV that you want out of it, right?
Yeah, I mean, I honestly think the problem is the suggested retail price. Like, I could deal with opening, I mean, first of all, I should probably be the last person to complain about opening poorly in Master sets. Those are the only sets where I tend to open well. But the packs being $10 and stores saying, hey, we're going to do you a favor and have a $30 draft. Like when mm-hmm. when it's communicated to you in that way, it's like, I don't think that people are aware what $30 can get me in other places, right? Like
mm-hmm.
I can have some pretty lengthy video game experiences for $30. And so I get, yes, there is the value back out and all those things. Like, and I could hit the lottery ticket. Mm-hmm. I could hit a foil Jace. But that's not the reality for a lot of people. And I think putting the money, like Iconic Masters was interesting in that they didn't put a lot of the money in the mythic spot. They put a lot of the money at the rare spot in like Horizon Canopy and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody universally hates Iconic Masters more than I do. But I do think maybe these casual products are the way that we need to get these reprints out and the core set. I am fine with one Master set a year.
Mm-hmm.
But whenever it was two Master sets in under 4 months or whatever it was.
Yeah, yeah.
That's where we were really, really, really pushing it. And honestly, I don't know that they want to make Modern affordable. I think the thing that stopped, like, if we lived in a world where modern was as expensive as standard, would anyone ever play standard?
It has to be a really good standard, right?
Yeah. And so I think that's the problem is you kind of have to keep, I don't know that they're incentivized, first of all, to make modern cheap. I really don't think they are. And I do think one thing I would rebut about the professor's video is when you throw around deck prices, and I know, look, you and I do that in shorthand, that's not really what it cost you out of pocket.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe you do this, Cameron, but I have never seen someone go up to a storefront counter and go, excuse me, I'd like modern Jund, $1,500.
Yeah.
That would probably make the store owner quite happy. But that's not what happens. You know, it's a grind. It's a, you know, you trade in, you trade up. And like, there's all these back channel, like trading groups on Facebook or whatever mm-hmm. to get into what you need to get into. So I think there is that element of it. And I also think that having modern be kind of the expensive boutique format that what we wish Legacy was, but isn't, is actually probably pretty healthy for the game. And so they're probably okay with where it's at.
I agree. Yeah.
But, you know, hey, the modern meta, I have issues with that, but I don't have a problem with modern's place. I wish the fetch lands were in particularly cheaper. But other than that, I think everything's kind of like, you know, hey, what is an Aether Vial? Like $30, like whatever. Mm-hmm. Snapcaster Mage and Tarmogoyf are also pretty egregious because they got upshifted, which is just horrible optics.
That's right,
I don't know why they did that. But, you know, hey, lower my pack price on my modern masters to $6 and then put all the garbage rares in there you want, right? All right, Cameron. So we're going to come back. We're going to talk a lot about some comics and video games and things like that. So we'll be right back. All right, Cameron. So many things to talk about this week.
Yes.
But I want to start with the fulfillment of a thing that we requested. So this is our 250th episode.
Mm-hmm.
And we knew our listeners would want us to do actual nothing for 250 episodes, so we've done actual nothing. But it feels like we've talked about DC having a service like Marvel Unlimited for nearly that long.
Mm-hmm.
So here we are. It's a unified service with... for DC Comics, so you get the comics, basically their back film catalog,
mm-hmm.
their animated catalog, and new original television series. So, what do you think, Cameron?
I could not be more excited to watch Young Titans or Young whatever the new... No. I mean, the new Robin... Teen Titans show. I mean, sure, whatever. I mean, it looks very much like the CW. I'm sure it's going to be great. Not for me. Mm-hmm. But man, if you just told me pay $100 a year and you can read all the Superman and Wonder Woman and Batman stuff that you want. Oh, and we'll throw in the Batman animated series just when you want to watch that on a whim. Sign me up. It seems like a dream come true. It's kind of like when Marvel Unlimited was released and it seemed like it was too good to be true that I would be able to just read Marvel comics till my heart's content. And I think we're getting there. I'm super excited about this service. If it pays off, I'm totally down. Just being able to read Superman. Oh my gosh, do I want to read Superman in a digital form? I think this is going to be awesome. And then just like a value add, like I'm surprised that they were able to launch it or they're able to launch this as quickly as possible just because Disney's been talking about this, it seems like forever. Some other like big universe things have been talking about this forever. And DC is doing something, which is totally awesome. So I'm super excited. I'm genuinely excited for this service. When this came out, I was like texting you. As soon as I found out about the information, I'm like, dude, this is it. This is my dream. So,
well, in the original press release, gosh, was it 2 months ago or something? It just basically made it sound like it was just video.
Mm-hmm.
Like it was just the TV shows and movies. And I thought,
no thanks.
Oh, no thanks. I mean, Now, just so we're all clear here, the Batman animated series and Superman animated series live on Amazon Prime right now.
Okay.
Right? And so there's this whole big game you have to play as a media consumer is what is going to happen in the next 3 years as these conglomerates all essentially break apart into their own streaming services. CBS All Access has theirs.
Yep.
And the Disney one is looming, right? Like, if you just stop and skip through whatever is on Netflix, a ton of Disney content is there right now between Marvel and Star Wars and all that. And so it's like, okay, yes, Marvel Unlimited is a thing, but it's very conceivable that Marvel launches its own, you know, movies, all their animated series, which I think we can all agree has a much less prestigious history than DC's animated. I mean, Batman the Animated Series is in the conversation of the greatest cartoon ever made. I mean, I think, what are you talking, Looney Tunes?
It's up there for sure.
I mean, it's a really short elite list that it's on. You know, like maybe the Flintstones. I'm trying to think of like what is of that level. And so, yeah. So that is a huge value add. By the way, the Justice League cartoon, Batman Beyond. I mean, we could go
all
on
that stuff.
Whole,
yeah. The whole run of stuff from the 90s is fantastic. Yeah.
There's that 10-year window that's really, really good. And a huge value add to me. The DC films, hey, I mean, I'm going to watch Superman 1 a bunch, and that's probably it. But it's a cool idea to merge this all into one. And then also, I mean, for some people that are really invested in the DCU TV stuff, it's a great ad. I mean, I think Flash is the best of that group. But again, all that stuff has the same CW problem where everyone's acting ability is inversely proportionate to how good looking they are. You could actually chart it mathematically, I think.
Yes, I'm sure you can.
But anyway, dude, I'm just so excited for them to launch this service. I'll probably be just doing it a month at a time just to see. Mm-hmm. But what really is intriguing to me is how they've kind of worded the comic stuff, because they say from Action Comics 1 until Rebirth. Well, the Rebirth branding isn't on the comics anymore. That went away a few months ago. And when was Rebirth? 3 years ago? 2 years ago? Something like that.
Yeah, I don't remember.
And so there's no way they're going to cannibalize their new on the shelf stuff. I just have trouble imagining that. Yeah. Marvel does a 6-month window or whatever. And so I assume it'll be something like that. The other big question is what's going to happen with Vertigo? Everything I've seen shows only high level superhero stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you get all this like weird middle ground stuff, like John Constantine used to be Vertigo. Now he's in the DCU. So where does that all kind of fit?
That's interesting. Yeah. Yeah.
Because the Vertigo books sell a lot of trade paperbacks at Barnes & Noble.
For sure.
And so I don't know that they want to do something about that or not. Anyway, but I'm down, dude. We'll probably have a very intense review the week that comes out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Also, I want to talk about a few video games here, Cameron. We are on the eve of No Man's Sky next. I'm picking it up first thing tomorrow. I've decided not to work for a section of time so I can restart my No Man's Sky. Like, I'm starting all the way from scratch. I got it on Xbox. I'm doing it. I'm going all the way. And so, really, really stoked. I don't know if you've seen the trailer for the new.
It looks cool, I think. Yeah, yeah. I'm excited.
I'll forever be the apologist for that game. But I want to talk about Pixel Junk Monsters 2.
Oh, gosh.
So
breathe. Okay, okay, go.
Huge Pixel Junk Monsters 1 fan. There's this era of tower defense games in the PlayStation 3 era and Xbox. And, man, there was, you know, Pixel Junk Monsters, Mushroom Wars, Comet Crash. Like, we could go through them all. And I think Pixel Junk Monsters is very easily the best of the group. There's a Vita version of it that is really good. I'd say the biggest problem is the game is actually quite punishing. It actually asks you to play through levels perfectly, and sometimes that can be very, very difficult to progress that way. But for those of you who don't know, Pixel Junk Monsters is a very cartoony tower defense game where you have a village of like 20 people, and you have to defend them against these hordes that come in. With Pixel Junk Monsters, there's no randomization. The pattern is set, so it's really more about you solving the pattern. Pixel Junk Monsters 2 is a fine tower defense game, but a poor sequel. What they've decided to do, and I've got it on Switch, but I believe it's available on everything.
I think it's everywhere, yeah.
But I thought, oh, this will fit best on Switch. But dude, what they've decided to do is to zoom in. So you cannot see the whole map at once. And they've added some kind of bizarre traversal mechanic. So like now your Tiki Man can jump. And so sometimes you might have to jump over a gap or something like that. And look, if you are a passerby and you see the game, you're going to say, that looks like the sequel to Pixel Junk Monsters. It looks very similar. And a lot of the core gameplay loop is the same, but they just made these little changes for people that are like me that were really intensely into the first one, I don't think did as well. And so I'm pretty disappointed in it. But then at the same time, it really scratches an itch because tower defense games aren't nearly as popular as they were 10 years ago. And so it's definitely not a bad game. It's just not, you know, it's like when Michael Jackson came out with Thriller. I mean, and then the album after that was destined to be a disappointment. It doesn't matter how good it is.
Yeah, yeah. Was that bad? Or because that was, I mean, still not as good as Thriller, but okay.
Well, I mean, we could argue that it was a steady downslope.
sure. Yeah.
Right. anyway, though I really liked his single that his last hit single that came out in the early 2000s. I think it was called You Rocked My World. I thought that was a really nice little upbeat tune.
It's serviceable. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so Cameron, if someone would like to talk to you about Michael Jackson's back catalog, where could they? Oh,
please. That's like my second favorite thing next to Magic. At @Cameron_McCoy on Twitter.
I'm @Curtis Now. Our official show feed is @SpikeFeedMTG. We will check you guys next week.